With the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Mead?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Okay, first up is audience communication. We don't have anybody signed up at this time, but we'll offer to the audience going once, twice. Okay, with that, we will move on. We're going to do a presentation. Brian, the first one said the design review board appointments, and you asked if we could postpone that a couple
of... Please.
Yes, if with the consent of the council, we'd like to postpone that for the next meeting. Thank you. Okay, next up is the Great Garden Awards. Bob?
Councilmember Steckler, and I think, is going to take the lead on this presentation.
I am. I'm actually going to come down here and grab a PowerPoint. Right. Okay, good. Well, I've been asked as the... I'm the council representative on the Arts and Beautification Board, and as such, I was working with the board on their... bringing back the Great Garden Awards that we did this year. Yay! It was a lot of fun, and I want to take a few minutes to just give you an update on how we handled it. And tonight we're going to recognize our Great Garden Award winners who are here tonight and take back their signs and hand them their final awards. So to kind of give you a little background about how we did this, because we kind of figured out how do you pick the Great Garden Award for a city like Mill Creek? So we actually went through and we broke up Mill Creek into the following six zones. So each one of us got a zone, and in that zone, the representative for that zone went out and looked at every house and every garden in that zone, picked the ones that they liked, took pictures of them, and brought them back as a nomination for that zone. We had 28 nominations, as you can see up there on the board, and of those six zones, we picked two winners from each zone, which I think was a great idea on how to represent the differences of Mill Creek, because we do have some different zones in different areas, and it was really, really a lot of fun. So why don't we could probably start with, let me run through all of the winners and let you guys sit there and enjoy your seats. And then what we'll do is we're going to ask all of the winners to come up, and we're going to take a really fantastic photo opportunity and give you your actual award. So first of all, let's just recognize the award winners. Our first stop, and I should say, too, on the day that we went out to present the awards, I think it was a quite cold 96 or 97 degrees when we went out. And there was three of us that quickly became two of us from the board who actually went out and planted the signs. But of course, Gordon, our ever so faithful Mill Creek employee, drove us and stayed with us all the way through. But the first group that we went to in zone one, which you can see here, we took the pictures of the actual homes. Guy and Jamie Arnfield on the left, and Stephen and Deborah Brent. I don't believe we're home at the time that we dropped by the awards, because this was around 4 o'clock. Oh, you were home, that's right, yeah. You were home. But we actually got the picture of your place out front afterwards. I think we had a photo opportunity there at the beginning. Then we went to zone two, and in zone two, you can see we actually got out with the award winners. On the left, Ron Lowell was working away in his garage, and we gave him his award, along with myself and Michelle. As you can see here, it's kind of John and Michelle's show after that. Then we went over to Tanya Hearn's house, and Tanya was just very excited to get her award. She was pumped. She thought that was great. And you can see by the flowers why we picked her. Then Harold and Lisa Reed. Lisa was very apologetic about her boll weevils that had eaten a piece of her grass, but the rest of her garden was spectacular. And she took us around to make up for it. We saw the backyard with the pond and everything. It was beautiful. And then Terry and Rosario Carroll, who I know from band and other activities, beautiful home, beautiful front garden. You can't really see all the stuff up that's inside. Then we went over to zone four, which is over by, closer to Saddle Hill Road, that particular area. And Jennifer, I don't think Jennifer quite believed we were going to
give her an award. We had to, you know, Gordon was, could see her inside and refused to stop knocking until she got out and came to the door. I was like, somebody come at my door at 5:30. And so Jennifer was like, really? Me? That's great. Well, she did a nice job on the front of her house. Beautiful job in a corner house. And then, of course, Michelle and I got a little tired as the scene kept going. We stopped by Jeff and Amy's, Strickland, in one of the original development sites of Mill Creek, and presented her golden, her garden award. And then we went over and saw Jim and Shirley. There's Shirley in the picture in their particular one. And this one, this is very close to the park, off of the parks that we had the...
Pine Meadow.
Yeah, Pine Meadow. Yeah, Pine Meadow Park. And this house, I mean, we were just jazzed at the ivy that they had trained over that garage and attached and made it. It was absolutely something out of an English cottage. It was really beautiful. Then we went over, and my neighbor right here and from Evergreen, hope I said the name correctly, Tadachu?
Nakajima.
Mr. Nakajima. we presented his award. He wasn't home at the time. I drove back home later that night. The sign was gone. I thought maybe he was embarrassed. And I went back and talked to him. He says, no, I want somebody to steal it. Which I thought was really cool, you know?
And then Robert and Wayne Adams' house, and we were getting kind of weird at this point, all the pictures. So I do want to congratulate all of our winners for the Great Garden Awards. This is a beautiful city that we live in with some really remarkable homes and great pride. Pride in our community and pride in your own homes, and that pride really is to be commended to all of you. I also want to recognize this incredible Arts and Beautification Committee. Benjamin, you're here for reals. There you are, stand up and stay up. Michelle Edwards, Michelle? Oh, she's still tired from taking pictures with me, I think. Yeah, she's still recuperating. Let's see, Paula Dicklin, are you here? Oh, Paula's here. There you are, you're hiding. And then Jean Smart, are you here, Jean? And then finally, ladies and gentlemen, our chairman, our leader, Matt Buchanan. Matt? He's out of town? Oh, I was going to say nice things about him. Oh, okay. Well, and I think also we need to recognize Joni and Gordon, who come to our meetings, who support us. Thank you very much. I'm just going to thank you for your time. We'd like to present the awards today, so could we have all of our winners stand right here in front of the city council? We're going to get this incredible photo opportunity with each one of you.
As we present you with this luxurious recognition award.
Can you help me out?
Thank you so much.
Want to help me out too?
Great.
So let's all squeeze in. Everybody, you must touch shoulders with the person next to you. Everyone, cuddle up. There'll be nobody left in the audience. Okay, snuggle up. Come on, Jake. Snuggle. Snuggle up, everybody.
Because my picture can get better.
Oh, they won't get along?
So,
short people in front. Keep snuggling up. I'm not politically correct. Okay. Actually, could we hand them their award before we take the picture? So we want to make sure each one of you gets your official member of award. So we're going to hand them all out.
This is how you're not here. Down from the subject to your address. They're all...
Oh, I'll get back to you. I'll get back behind my head. Everybody get their award.
No, not quite. We're working on it.
Javis? Right here?
Thank you.
Down here? I'll get that still needs. Because we want you all to present. Oh, here you go, guys. Make sure and show with pride your award when you take this photo opportunity, okay? Let's get that award out there.
You guys get the picture too? Come on.
Okay.
Stand behind Mark. Come on. That's perfect.
I mean, I bet. Hey. Pam, can you scoot toward Vince just a hair? John, we can't see you.
Oh, here. Can you see me now?
Okay.
Can you see me now?
One, two, three. Okay.
You guys?
Oh. Oh, you want one more? All right, thank you.
Good job, man.
too.
When you saw the parking lot was full, was there anything you should turn around and leave?
There wasn't, actually. Not pre-advertised anything, so I it's all cool.
Must be something good.
Budget for those. Yeah. Thanks for protecting that sign, you know?
Regulations that were due in December of 2016.
Yeah. Something that Diana would probably do.
It's an interesting city.
That stuff doesn't.
Okay. So if it's okay with the council, we have Kevin Gibney and Heidi's here. Unless you guys want to sit here, we're going to have a fascinating discussion about surface water capital program development. Not what you're into? Okay, is it okay with the council if we consider that first? Okay, Bob, is that okay with you?
Sure. Are you talking about the lease for the Mill Creek Business Association? Yes.
Item E. So, you're up.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor. Joni's going to present a little bit of information about this lease, but this is a lease with the Mill Creek Business Association. The agenda bill initially noted it was with the Chamber of Commerce, but we wanted to make sure that we capture their legal name, which is Mill Creek Business Association, doing business as Mill Creek Chamber of Commerce, and they are scheduled to officially assume that name on January 1. This is a lease that is for a one-year period. It's occupying the same space that the Senior Center had occupied previously. And we believe the value of having the Chamber, Mill Creek Business Association, and the Chamber of Commerce in this space outweighs any potential rental income that the city might receive from future occupants. And our recommendation is to move forward with the lease, and I'd ask Joni if she has any other information she'd like to present.
First, just in case you don't know them, Kevin Gibney and Heidi Butts are the president and vice president, respectively, of the Mill Creek Business Association, soon to be chamber, and they're here tonight. But this association, coming to be a chamber, has been in Mill Creek since 1997, 21 years in the making, and I think that's significant that they've remained here as Mill Creek has ebbed and flowed, and they have been a tremendous partner of ours. Which is why it makes sense as we are trying to grow our tourism efforts and bolster economic development, that we are really seeking to have this as a closer proximity partnership. So being upstairs will allow us to work together even more closely than we already do right now. I think the information Bob laid out very quickly is the gist of it. We are seeking space for them as they become a chamber and need a little bit of brick-and-mortar space until they can raise funds eventually to have their own place. So upstairs in the old Senior Center space is a great location for them, and they've looked at it and seem comfortable with the rooms, and we're excited to have this opportunity with them.
Mayor, I'd make one more note in that there's no current need for the space that the city has at this time, and therefore, again, we'd recommend that council authorize me to execute this agreement with Mill Creek Business Association, doing business as Mill Creek Chamber of Commerce.
And looking at Exhibit A, what scope of services are we getting that we're not happening already? Festival that happens anyway. You know, the stuff that's there is what are we getting for the space?
In addition to the items that you noted that are on Exhibit A, I think things that as the chamber expands and provide services to its business interests. Certainly any economic development activity or tourism or advocacy issues that we want to hear directly from the businesses would be a benefit for Mill Creek.
Okay, so this is a one-year lease.
That's correct.
And so over the next year, approving this tonight, you would have a year to come up with specific deliverables.
Well, we tried to identify the deliverables. We would if you would like us to further evaluate what sort of that more specific measurable or outcomes that were achieved by having the Mill Creek Business Association or the Chamber in this space, staff could do that. But I would expect them to fall within the sort of the avenues as do most chambers who occupy spaces of municipal facilities, provide similar types of services. And so to the extent that we can provide more of a definitive list of actual outcomes by having them in the building, we will, but I would expect them to fall within the five or six elements that we've noted in the agenda.
What are we currently using the space for?
We're not using the space for anything at the moment.
So it's roughly 2,000 square feet. I know when we did the initial remodel of the annex as well as City Hall, the conversation back then was that that space would be opened up, and I'm not saying the business association doesn't do great things, but that the space would be opened up for leasing to bring some sort of funding back toward the city. So for 2,000 square feet, what would that get us, just since it is taxpayer dollars, what would that get us on the open market if we were to lease it to a business?
I'm thinking on a triple net basis is about $16, $17 a square foot on an annual basis. This is a space that, and that's based on what our current tenants in the building are paying today. But recognize this is a space, it's configured a little differently in some of the other spaces, so I expect that sort of the true market lease rate would be less than that 16 or 17 on a triple net basis. So we looked at that and just felt that, again, the value that the Mill Creek Business Association and the Chamber of Commerce could deliver, recognizing that some of that and most of that is intangible, would still be far greater than any potential revenue that we might be able to collect from a private business.
Yeah, and please know, I'm not trying to discount anything the association does or anybody does for that matter. I know at one time there was a plan in place that this was the next step forward. So I would, if we are going to give them the property, that we definitely start putting a plan in place to either lease the property out or come sort of other agreement in the year agreement that we have. I think that's fair. Thanks.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This Bob won't know because he wasn't here. I thought the plan was that we had a need for some sort of server room or some other capability long term, and so that was one reason that we were headed towards emptying up that space. I didn't think we were going to turn it back into rental to private businesses. So I thought there was a declining window of opportunity here as well, but I don't know what that use was. I thought that was part of the plan.
The only use that I've, not in this space, but there's a conference room space that has been talked about for a emergency operations center, and that still is allowed based on the space that's there. So this would not interfere with that operation in the future. But I haven't heard of any other identified city use in need of that space.
So before Rebecca went on sick leave, she met with Kevin and Heidi, and it was her proposal to them for this space. So this predates Bob. This is a long-term conversation we've been having with the Mill Creek Business Association.
Yeah, so Councilmember Todd was correct. The back portion of that senior center where the computer lab was at one time was visualized to be our new EOC. But when we started looking at that, the space is inadequate for what we want to create with an EOC and a multi-purpose area where we can have training and courses and classes and meetings. What we've adjusted our plan to look at the big room across the hall, what we call room 201, which is currently a multi-purpose room and a classroom All kinds of events are held in there. So our needs are being met by that space, and we're in the process of preparing a, you know, a capital proposal to present to you to look at that in the future. So, yes, our needs are being met, and you are correct. There was discussion at one point, but that has evolved.
Okay. Well, then this is a one-year lease because we are going to have space needs, and that's what that building's for. So as long as, you know, we have a chance to work things out over the next year, I can live with a year or more, but until we work things out, it's just kind of hard when you see it for the first time. So, anybody else?
Yeah, Mike's not done, and Mike? I had one.
The Mill Creek Business Association folks, when they were exploring the idea of being a chamber, and in doing so, I went and talked to Lake Stevens, and they've got a great relationship with their chamber. And one of the things that City and Lake Stevens does is they have a little funky building, an old funky building, because Lake Stevens has old funky buildings, but it's a building in the park that they provide at no cost, no dollar cost, to the Chamber of Commerce, who does a lot of these kinds of things that are described in here. And really, it's that the people come to town and say, where's your chamber? Who is the chamber? And I always end up explaining, well, we got these two different business associations, and by the time I'm done explaining, they've kind of, their eyes have glassed over, and they just said, I just want to know, where's the Chamber of Commerce? And Lake Stevens has the opposite, where that is the place where people go get information on touristy activities to do, things that are going on in the community, what businesses are in town, you know, opportunities. Is this a great place to do business? And so because there's a location that is identified and is a physical brick-and-mortar place, I was convinced that this is a great thing to do. Checking it with City Manager Stowe when this idea first came up, I said, is this common? He said, oh, yeah, it's very common to have this happen. So I'm very much in favor of this. I think having a physical location for MCBA, now going to become the chamber because they made the decision to become that kind of agency, is going to be fantastic. Right now, people will say, you know, what's going on? Mill Creek Business Association, well, where do I go see them? Well, come to the meeting. They have meetings once a month, at lunch meetings. You know, they don't have a place to go and attract and talk to businesses. So I think it's going to be good for the small businesses that want to be in town, a good place for tourist kinds of things, economic development kinds of things, a locus for operations. And I think, yeah, we're giving it a year try. This is not permanent. They're not looking for a permanent space. I think this is a help them get up and going and find out what their needs are going to be. So I'm 100% in favor of this. Thanks.
I'll be brief. I agree. Well stated. I just had one question. When did the senior center relocate? April?
The first week of May.
Okay. Has there been any interest from private parties in looking at that space? I didn't think.
Not to my knowledge.
Thanks. I'm in support of this.
Yeah, my question was, we all support whatever we can do to help the chamber. That's great. Do they need this entire space? That's a lot of square footage. And I'm just curious, is that, I see you shaking your head, yes, we do. We would have a use for it. Because there is what I'm thinking is there is a shortage of meeting spaces that if maybe the chamber would be open to making spaces available when needed by their businesses in the community. That would be, you know, something I would like to see us bringing businesses into this area, and I think it serves your purpose as well. And, you know, local entities, local employers, small business people, that type of thing. It'd be nice to be able to support that. And if that's something we could do, I would support this as well. I just wasn't sure if you need a whole 2,100 square feet.
The beauty of this space that they have is that instead of renting a space and having to pay funds for other things that they're doing, like holding business workshops, they can actually do it within the space and have their networking events there if they desire. Right now, without that space, they are paying funds to rent space.
As long as the city is making the space available and they're willing to share the space, I'm all for that.
Okay, so we need a motion to authorize the city manager to execute an agreement with the Mill Creek Chamber of Commerce to commence November 1, 2018 and ending December 31, 2019. You have a motion?
Okay.
You have a motion? Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. And then we'll go back to our.
Sorry, Mayor. What did you say? No, that was
okay.
It. Just a note, I don't know if your microphone is on. The audio recording is having difficulty picking you up.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you.
Quiet. Okay.
Do you want to do item F now, or just we go back to our study session?
We have our consultant here and ready to go with their study session if council would like to do that, or if you wanted to take on item F, we can at this time, too.
We'll go back to study session.
Great. So I'm going to ask the Public Works Director to briefly introduce our consultant team, Pertit, who's going to share with you some of the findings that they've learned about our surface water system.
Thanks, Bob. Good evening, Council and audience present here tonight. So today we have a presentation. Pertit is going to be providing you a summary of what we've worked on over the past 6 months. Prior to having Pertit present, I wanted to provide a little context as to what they're going to be presenting on. So as you've seen in your agenda summary, we have, as a city, approximately 264,000 linear feet of pipe, of surface water pipe. That's in its totality. The presentation that Pertit will be delivering tonight focuses on 14% of that, 14% of that totality of pipe. And the way we came about, because that's a lot of pipe to and a lot of video to watch, and so how did we decide how to come up with a priority? And so a lot of it has to do with recent experience with Sweetwater Ranch, where we had a pipe that failed, and it was a 36-inch diameter pipe, one of our larger pipes, and it was a significant impact to certainly our surface water fund and to our resources, and you're familiar with the project, how it unfolded. So that was a key factor for us, looking at a prioritization criteria when you have so much pipe to look at and review. So that was one of the accomplishments that we feel very good about, is that we have a prioritization criteria. Often in the public service, we get questions asked about how do we choose projects, one project over another. And because of this study that Pertit has conducted, we are able to answer that question. Pertit started their work in late February, and Council awarded a contract in an amount not to exceed $132,252. They have completed their scope of work under budget and on schedule. Again, we focus on pipes that are what I'm calling larger infrastructure, so that's 18-inch in diameter or greater, since they have their potential failure could have a negative impact on life, property, or a combination of both. Pertit will walk you through the grading system that we followed, and we wanted to do a grading of the failures that was easy for laymen to understand and not necessarily require a lot of complicated engineering. So we opted for something that is most all of us are familiar with, is a school grade system. So A being excellent and F being failure. And we didn't want to make it too granular and kept it at three levels, so F being failure, C minus being middle ground, and A being in excellent condition. With that said, I will introduce the Pertit team. Daryl Smith will be delivering the presentation, but also here tonight we have Kern McGee and Briar Cafaro from Pertit.
Else. So again, thank you. I'm can everyone hear me on the mic? Again, I'm Daryl Smith with Pertit. Been an engineer for 28 years in the Northwest. And let's walk through the storm pipe 18-inch diameters or greater video. Oh, it is on the screen. This is Andy. Okay, good. So let me give you a quick overview of the summary of work. First of all, we reviewed over 48 hours of large diameter pipe inspected throughout the city. Again, these are the large diameter pipes. It was collected by city through a program through 2012 to 2018, the video logging, but it needed to be reviewed and assessed and prioritized, and that's really where we came in. So we assess 282 runs of large diameter pipes and again assigned them a letter grade to each fault that we found in the pipe infrastructure. We then prepared planning level cost estimates on how to thoughtfully, you know, address how will it be repaired and how do you create a reasonable program to do just that. We also prioritized the repairs and bundled them into logical groupings of capital plans that could then be issued contracts to get competitive bids from local contractors. And then again, you know, the smaller diameter pipes, you know, were not reviewed. So this is like 15, primarily 12-inch diameter pipes. And there is a large percentage of those pipes in your city, you know, anywhere from 82%, so forth. But there's also smaller risks with those smaller diameter pipes. Let's talk about the grading for a second. So grade F, bad. You know, these are pipes. Sorry. You know, these are pipes that exhibit dangerous pipe deformation, structural failures, a lot of joint subsidence. So two pipes just aren't coming together, and some of the water is flowing out to the bedding materials and eroding that away. So again, typically, you know, this is where you get water to soil contact, and that's a really bad thing, especially in the pipe industry, because you have a lot of granular materials and it wants to wash away, and it literally starts building caverns underneath the ground, which are dangerous. Repair within 1 year. We really think the F pipes need to be addressed quickly. Then we have a grade C minus. These are pipes that have some faults to them, and they will definitely get worse and more severe over time, but you have a little bit of time to program those out and systematically address them over a 10-year period. I just want to give you a photograph just to kind of walk us through what some of these failures look like. So number one is pipe deformation of the inverts. I mean, the top of that pipe doesn't exist. It's destroyed. There's a large root. Number two is a large root blockage. Probably 80% of that capacity is gone. You get a really large, let's say, you know, that 100-year storm event that the media tells us about every, 2 years? You know, that larger, you know, that's a bad thing, and it's probably why you see some catch basins overflowing. And then a collapsed pipe is number three. The pipe is literally deformed and getting squished. Again, less capacity. Another failure we see in item four, or photograph four, and we're also seeing it actually in photograph one, and that's where another utility is creating damage to our pipes. So a common industry for smaller diameter piping is to use directional boring machines. So you see this in gas and you see this in communications. Well, if it's not done thoughtfully and carefully, you start drilling through other pipes. And we have some of those in the city. And there's an opportunity there to recover those costs also, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Then the typical C pipes, you know, there's issues with them. One of the photographs shows some roots. The other one shows kind of the material almost eroding away on the edges and mineral deposition occurring within the pipe itself. Let's go through the pipe locations. We primarily see them in three locations in the city. Obviously, the downtown area. We see some spread out along the Seattle Hill area. And then we see them a little bit scattered, the F failures, again, in the north end. And I'm going to go back one slide. So all these are the F faults. And again, you know, why is it cause stress to engineers? Because we don't like to see, civil engineering, public works, really great, lays the ground for all civil infrastructure, and really citizen, you know, to have a society, you know, without clean water, good sanitation, sewer, good water, you know, that's the foreground. I don't want to see these involved because then I have to talk to the first responders, and they start asking me all sorts of questions. And when a fault like this occurs, you don't know exactly what's going on at first. You just see a hole in the ground. What's causing that hole, and how is it creating? And again, you know, we saw a smaller one occur in your city this past year. And here's a couple of photographs of more recent ones in the greater, you know, metropolitan area. So one down in Burien. I remember the shoreline one because I dealt with a very large sinkhole that same weekend in the city of Edmonds. Fifth Avenue was shut down in Edmonds, so basically about a five-lane roadway right in front of Petosa's back in the day was totally blocked. And that shoreline was just a scary, scary one to see. So again, Sweetwater Ranch, you know, you're very aware of that 36-inch failure. And one of the things that makes these really tricky is this is underground failures that are occurring. You don't always see the magnitude of it until something more catastrophic is happening. You even start seeing a bridging effect, so the material creates a cavern, and somebody's walking on top of that thinking that it's solid ground. Again, it just needs to be addressed efficiently. And the good news is, if you get ahead of these before these types of sinkhole situations occur, they can be done very cost effective. So, you know, the Sweetwater, we're estimating, had it been identified early in a more drier climate and the ground wasn't saturated from the sinkhole, that might have been like a $180,000 fix. You know, instead, it's probably more like an $800,000 fix. And, you know, being a homeowner, you're kind of nervous about a large excavator running right up next to the side of your house. And I'm sure that contractor had a very good operator because, you know, if you've ever, I've operated some excavators. They're not the most fragile. There's an art behind them. I would rather see a small pit like this. I'd rather see like a 4x4 pit that systematically goes in and fix a banding type problem. You get a metal sleeve, you clip it over the bad joint, you tighten it up, you might have to add some concrete around it. That's a $4,000 fix, or $3,000 fix. Then there's situations where we need to repair the entire pipe length of a failed pipe section, and that's about a $20,000 fix. You remove the section, put a new one in. And then a full-length failure between catch basins. And this is when we would recommend that we had multiple failures. And there were locations where we had some F failures and we had some C failures. And this is where you just want to go ahead and pull all the old pipe out in that particular location. So the prioritization criteria for F faults. Again, the immediate repair needs is about $750,000 to make those repairs at this higher level planning, you know, level estimating. We need to prioritize those locations which we have. Again, severe pipe structure damage, exposing soil to water, threat to private property, that's always very high on the list. Steep slopes, you know, we don't want to blow out and flood something downstream or cause damage to local wetlands or other critical sensitive areas. Access to city functions, police, fire, school. And one of the things that can really be disruptive to that is when we would, like, let's say, lose an arterial or a collector to street. That causes all sorts of long-term impacts for first responders. Even as simple things as getting kids to school is very disruptive. And again, we're focused on the large diameter pipes. Bundling of the C repairs. We estimate there's over $4 million worth of repair needs that's required for the Cs. And again, this is for the larger diameter pipes. So this is something we want to spread out over a period of time in a systematic approach. So the top repair, you know, to you know, repair those faults in that 10-year period, we're actually suggesting you start in about year 2020. After you've dealt with the F faults, and then program approximately $700,000 a year to work on that. And the reality is you're probably going to have that $700,000 going for quite some time after, because you're probably going to want to look at some of the other pipes. And also CMP pipes, so that's corrugated metal pipe that's in the ground. It has a history of eroding and failing, particularly in this part of Western Washington, and that's just because the metallurgy, the alkalis in the soil just slowly deteriorate those pipes, and that's why you don't see it in more recent construction. When you typically do see it for large detention systems, they have special coatings on them that they didn't have 25 years ago. So the known unknowns. And really, this is a list of items that need to be thoughtfully assessed during the design process to make sure you have a full picture of all of the costs and exactly how to make these fixes. What do we need to close half of a lane? You know, how does it impact a house? So forth. So the depth of the stormwater pipes, you know, at each catch basin. You know, the proximity of the storm structures to buildings and foundations. We need those foundations to be stable as we're doing the work. Again, the potential cost recovery, where a utility company, whether it's a gas main or cable or whatever it is, you know, we need to be saying, hey, we have a franchise agreement, you caused some damage, we need you to participate in this fix.
Does that happen very often, that you do actually get money back from the utilities?
Yes, it does. It absolutely happens. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it can be tough. I mean, sometimes you're going, well, you know, I mean, it's going to be each time you come in for your permits and, you know, your blanket permit, we're gonna make life kind of tough on you until you get these things fixed.
I mean, I'm all just, about sharing the cost.
That's just the reality. I mean, but make no means, I would quibble more with them on the C's. I would go out and fix the F's quickly. You know, solve a problem now that, like, let's say an individual F, maybe it costs $50,000. Fix that $50,000 now. Don't let it take out somebody's front yard. Stability of the soil for excavation. Again, this is the saturation. Sweetwater, I think they were going to look at a variety of different methods to fix it, and they had really good engineers on that team. Yet the soil conditions just weren't going to allow that to work, and there were other things that were at play. So having a better idea of that in the design, you know, just saves you money during construction. The severity of the damage from the potential failure, and really the next item happens to kind of go into that or flush out. You know, I wish I had radar vision. I wish we had technology. There is some radar penetrating technology out there. It goes down 3 to 5 feet maximum, and really is closer to 3 feet. We can tell you what the inside of that pipe looks like, but I can't tell you what's going on right now on the outside of that pipe at a given location. At some times, we were seeing darkness. You know, that's something's going on there. We don't have soil, you know, at that given failure. So one of the easy ways is just to go through and do some potholing at those locations, and that can be done with a technology called an air knife, where you're just blasting air at a really high speed, and you have a vector truck, and you're sucking it up, and you literally can get a glimpse underground in a pretty small diameter, and it's easy to patch, and then you go down and you fix it, you know, in short order after that. And that's a classic technique that we would also require a contractor to do during construction. And just the complexity of the property restoration, you know, you just had a awesome presentation about these beautiful yards and homes in your city, and, you know, we have to be thoughtful whenever we can. Obviously, we'd like to try to fix it in the street somewhere where it's less painful for a property owner. Recommendations: repair all Category F pipe failures within 12 months. Repair all Category C pipe faults within 10 years. Just want to make sure it reads the same. perform the work in the drier months. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's a common thought, but yeah, let's do it in the summertime. When that ground's had a chance to dry a little bit. Coordinate also the pipe repairs to occur before pavement repairs, and that's just trying to stretch out, you know, your maintenance dollars and getting the best bang for that. The next steps will be that we're suggesting is to hire a consultant to design your F grade pipe repairs, then create work packages to implement those fixes. Then you would go through and hire a contractor to perform the work in 2019. So that really needs to happen fairly quick because, you know, come February, March, you really want to have your project on ad to get your best bids in the climate, in the bidding climate, because contractors kind of like to know how much work they have. You can even delay when they start the work, but they want to know whether they got the project or not. So they sharpen up their pencils. We also recommend that you do take a look at your 15-inch and your 12-inch diameter pipes. And you have about half of the city already CCTV'd for those pipes. And that's something that certainly, you know, a consultant like Pertique could do, but it could also be done with trained staff and even with assistance of interns. There's other ways to make that happen with a little bit of training. Review of the existing, like I said, the review of the existing footage. The other half of the city on the smaller diameter pipes have not been CCTV'd, so that's something we would also recommend that that occur. And I believe it is also a condition of your NPDS permit, so it's an actual city obligation as it stands. Identify corridor projects. So the thought here is there are some opportunities where you do have some failures. One of them is Mill Creek Boulevard, and one of them is Trillium Boulevard. So a bit of a greater discussion I would suggest happen on those corridors. Does the current street, does the current infrastructure fulfill all of your needs? Do you want them to be maybe more people-oriented or something that fits all the current characteristics of your city and your aspirations for the future? It's just a good time to take a look at that. And it might be simply you just want to restore the road efficiently. We did just that years ago on Hewitt in front of the event center in Everett. And actually, I think I'm going to turn it over to Gina.
Yeah, well, we can chat to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Darrell. So a couple of items that I wanted to highlight from what Darrell presented. Number one is these are planning level estimates. There's a lot of unknowns at this point, and this is not design. We know more than what we knew in February, but we don't know it all. So that's one. The estimates that Darrell presented, they are construction only. So say, for instance, for those F failures that we're estimating at a planning level to cost the city $750,000, to that we have to add the design costs, which usually is 15% in general of the construction costs, and then construction management or inspection. And that's usually ballpark 10% of the construction cost. So these numbers, at a minimum, need to be increased by 25%. So in the CIP that we are working on, the numbers that you will see will be based in part on what Darrell presented, but also increase to incorporate other aspects that are not included in this study. Another aspect of this, or another outcome of this exercise that Pratik conducted that has been really helpful to me, is a map that's included in your package. And that is actually page, small print, but page 51 of your package. And Darrell showed a couple of snapshots of that. And the reason why that's important to me is because we have maintenance crews that are out and about in the city day in and day out. And a lot of the sinkholes, some of the sinkholes that Darrell presented were pretty significant, but they don't always start like that. Actually, our very own Sweetwater Ranch started in a very discreet way that started off in 2016 with some indications of sinking, small sinking, maybe more along the lines of a pothole. And it was patched. And at that time, we didn't know that that would be today what we call an F. So we patched it, didn't know any better. There's a lot of stuff going underground that we don't know about. So this map equips our crew with information so when they're out there
and they see something, they can come back, or if they have the map with them, they can cross-reference, and where those red squares are at, we know that we're dealing in a location that's identified as enough. So whether we can deliver that project immediately or not, that's a separate discussion, but at least we know that we are dealing with a problematic area. Again, planning level at this time, the next step is to actually prepare PS&E packets for the city to advertise. That will be reflected in the CIP that we're putting together. Also, on a parallel path to what Petite has been doing and the planning level estimates, we have interviewed consultants because there's the funding aspect. So all we heard up to now is engineering and failures and pipes, but somehow this has to be funded, right? One of the things that we've been reviewing is our surface water utility fee, and we have interviewed consultants that can help us with that. Had two consultants interviewed, and we have selected FCS Group to help us with that, looking at our rates. And our rates, that study will include not just what we saw tonight, which is only capital, but it will also include operational costs that we have as a city in order to be compliant with our NPDES permit, to clean our ponds and catch basins and those type of requirements. So that's all I had to add at this time. If there's any questions.
Yeah, I have a quick question. So when we were talking about recovery here, one of the photos shows some pipe going through, and it says possibility of recovery is probable there. How does that come about? Is that the strategy you take before we start the project? Say, hey, listen, Puget Power or whoever, your pipe's intruding here. Let's split the cost down the middle. Let's get this done before it becomes a bigger problem.
Well,
is that part of the strategy?
I think so, and in fact, there's a real opportunity there because if we coordinate it with them, we can already have the ground open. We just need them to get in there and get some of their stuff out of the way and then, you know, do some of the fixes either with their forces, but generally just have them pay the city to have their contractor, you know, fix the damaged section of pipe. So there are some real, a real good way to do that. The other thing is the city actually does that on your project. So when you're doing a street project in your city, the city reaches out to all the utility companies, and the first thing the city will do is, where are your utilities? And how is this? It's, these contractors should know where your storm pipes are. You have a great storm pipe master plan sheet. There's ample opportunity for them to know. They're just cutting and blasting, and the reality is, contractors can do really good work, and they also tend to do really good work when they have an inspector nearby.
Thank
you. Is there any reason to think that the soil throughout Long Creek is going to be different from Long Creek? Yeah, I think so, and Gina's actually looked at the soil, but let me give you the first scenario, then I'll have definitely Gina chime in. One is if you have separations in pipe, you're just saturating the soil. Part of my yard stays wet until August because I have a, you know, I just have water that flows through it. So soil needs a chance to dry out. And so if you have a big failure, some of the soils will be wet and will be saturated, and you can anticipate it. I don't know about where water tables are. I'm not quite honestly as familiar with various water tables.
Yeah, they're,
in the
they're
city.
Pretty high in the city. I mean, we're a pretty wet city. What I saw at Sweetwater Ranch was very loose soils that tend to cave into themselves, and that's why shoring was not a desired method in that at that location for that project. It's a small city, small footprint. For purpose of this estimating exercise, I would assume that similar type of soil throughout the city, unless we have geotechnical borings that prove otherwise. I'm seeing the same thing at 35th, another project with an open hole.
But knowing what your soils are before you start doing the physical work and even as part of your design process is very desirable.
I'm just asking because we started out at $250,000 to fix Sweetwater Ranch and we ended up at $890,000 because the more we learned about the soils and what have you. So is that, I know this is high level guesstimates, but given our soils in the city, are they likely to all be like that, or was that unique, do you think, or...
Something that was unique also to Sweetwater Ranch was that the pipe was very deep. So that pipe at as deep as was 16 feet. So now we're talking, you know, some of these may be at that elevation or that depth. We don't know. That's one of the things, you know, that at this moment we don't know. So we're better off again than we were in February, but there's still a lot of work to do. How that would be handled is in the next phase. So the next step, now that we know our F failures, is to go into design. And at that point, we'll start looking at each one of those F locations, looking at the depth. Are we talking about an F in between two homes on a roadway and a front yard? Where are those Fs? So giving them more of a 3D. At this time, with this study, that's not there. So that's the next step. Geotechnical borings would be desirable.
And we haven't scoped the entire city yet. So is there a chance that we're going to find more Fs that have to be done right away also?
Yeah. Well, first of all, so we have looked at the entire city from a large pipe diameter. So we have looked at all large diameter pipes that we are aware of, and we looked awfully hard for them. So, but what we haven't looked at are the smaller diameter pipes, and again, that was just a risk level decision. And quite frankly, Gina came to me and asked me to do that all at once, and I just penciled it out on you know, literally on the napkin, and well, I can do that for about $500,000-$600,000, and you know, let's put the brakes on and let's think about. I mean, we're always having to prioritize things in this world, so we said, where are the greatest risks? And it's those large diameter pipes where we have the most forces on that water running on through them.
So, Joe, do you want to share about the Wildflower and the other neighborhoods? So we are aware of other Fs that are less than 18 inches in diameter.
Yeah, but a very small area. So, yeah, that was the Wildflower in the Mill Park Village neighborhoods. And we actually reported, I reported in front of City Council, because there was you were getting ready to go out with an overlay program as part of the county's program. I believe Kamal came and said, hey, Daryl, can you take a look at these video feeds real quick? We got some pipe in this area. We looked at it, and we did identify some Fs. But there had been, you know, some consternation about the chip seal program that had occurred before. And the decision was, let's go ahead and overlay. But we have a couple of Fs in that neighborhood, but they are 12-inch in diameter. And they should be fixed. And that was my recommendation back then. Still is. I don't know if it was a large monetary difference. It's just the notion of cutting a brand new paved street. It's as a former traffic engineer of the city of Edmonds, I always coordinated with our utility section to try to make sure we didn't do that.
So to answer your question, Mayor, the Fs that we've identified with this study focus on the larger pipe. In all likelihood, and we know of at least two locations where there are Fs in the smaller pipe, somewhere between 15 inches and 12-inch diameter. So that I would consider a phase two. As Darrell mentioned, we have a lot of pipe, and we had to deliver based on priorities and sizes where there could be a potential risk for property or life, and so that is how we chose the larger pipes.
Thanks, Daryl and Gina, for the presentation. And you raised something in one of your final slides there about Trillium and Mill Creek Boulevard. And I'm looking at the map here. Mill Creek Boulevard's got four or five, depending where you want to stop, of the Fs that are, I think, emergency, the ones you want to do now in the next year. But there's a whole bunch of pipe repairs required within 10 years, a whole bunch of C minuses along there, too. And I'm with you that if before we dig up that street and do a lot of repairs, I think it makes sense for us to think about what do we want Mill Creek Boulevard, and this is kind of behind Albertsons, etc. going on. I'm going to raise this before I've raised it again. I really think we need to look at what we can do to help that area develop or redevelop in a nice fashion. I don't think it, I wouldn't be happy if we just opened it up, fixed it, and put it back the way it was. I think we will have missed an opportunity for us to look at how our city could evolve that oldest part that is not really all that attractive. It's a cut through for a whole bunch of traffic. I'd rather be part of an extension of Mill Creek Main Street. Come on down to 164th. I also think there's an opportunity, and maybe it's a long shot, but Community Transit is going to spend a lot of money putting in an orange line on 164th, and they're having a hard time figuring out how to turn a bus around. They're going to spend $6 million in McCollum Park to make it so they can go all the way up to McCollum Park and turn buses around. If we got really, really creative and did something as almost as crazy as what Bothell was able to pull off in our downtown area, is there some way to have something happen? Mill Creek Boulevard, we're going to put a lot of money into fixing Mill Creek Boulevard stormwater. We will have to repave it. We could maybe coordinate with Community Transit on how farther buses have to go to turn around. I don't know. It's probably impossible, but I think it's worth getting really creative and thinking about that before we just jump into designing those F failures for our 2019 capital improvement plan. Thanks.
So, Councilmember Todd, I appreciate your comment. That is something that, at this time, staff and myself were looking at it from a more holistic perspective, because we do see the opportunity on Mill Creek Boulevard from a planning, from a zoning, use level, et cetera. So we're looking at it from that perspective. We have had multiple meetings, at least three, with Community Transit staff, and we are on board, and it's our desire to see how we can loop Orange around downtown Mill Creek. So we see a Mill Creek Boulevard study, feasibility study, corridor improvements feasibility study as a great opportunity with this upcoming CIP.
Yeah, good, thank you. The other thing, just for you can't tell, because the 36-inch pipe between Douglas Fir and Sweetwater Ranch was a surprise to me. I would have never figured that. But when you're talking about these 18 inches and above pipes, these are the ones that are under the streets that are through every one of our neighborhoods. The 12s and 15s are smaller branches into small. Give us a layman's sense about where you see the big ones in general versus where you see the small ones. This map shows all of them. It doesn't show size, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, and you're generally right. I mean, most of the larger diameter pipes are going to be located in the streets. There are definitely some exceptions to the rule, and part of that's also just how your city's developed over years with, like, you know, the different communities and the private, you know, some of their private stormwater infrastructure, and it's usually where that private infrastructure then ties into city infrastructure, and that's when you'll see a crossover, like, between homes. And, you know, just because it goes underground, I mean, it might be out of sight, but hopefully it's not out of mind. You know, it's things that, you know, maintenance is really diligently, you know, constantly thinking about.
Is there a crossover year when developers quit using CMP? Because we haven't swept the whole city, but a lot of this, I shouldn't say a lot, much of this over in this triangle is new construction, definitely done with stuff that's not.
I really don't have that answer at the top of my head today, but that's something we certainly could look up through sales pipe infrastructure. But really, I mean, and actually a gentleman right in the back, Mr. Gaffaro, you know, the plastic pipes really started taking off extensively, you know, in the 90s. So most of this is probably, you know, 70s and 80s vintage pipes. We just slowly got away from it. Like I said, you will see the CMP as detention facilities, and that can be okay if it has the right treatment.
I mean, you can see, like, the Wildflower Park thing. That, you know, we talked about that before. They just stuck the pipes together. They were not proper bells and banded. It was just whoever did that in the first place, oops, that should have been inspected better. But it's also of an age that it's fading away, and you see that in downtown business district. So at some point, though, there's going to be houses in some of our newer developments that won't have this same kind of problem.
Also, you know, pipe, you know, the Romans were pretty good. Their pipe lasted a long time. But generally, most cities have, like on their water mains and their sanitary sewer, most pipes are replaced once every 100 years. That's pretty typical for most cities to do. I don't know what your your current cycle is. And it was always focused on more of the sanitary sewers and the storms, and now people are kind of really, yeah, I guess we got to replace the storm pipe too.
Involvement in that process. So as we get to adopting that in December, or does it actually have to be November, doesn't it? Don't we have to have the, if we end up deciding we've got to raise the surface water rate, don't we have to have that into the county by the end of November?
It'd be the end of November that you'd have to, in order to have your rate be effective the following year.
Okay, so what caught my eye is looking at the scope of services. They had some line items for a couple council meetings, but we're going to have a public process or something where the public's going to have an opportunity to chime in on the decisions we're going to be faced with here in a couple months.
That's true. It'll be part of your budget process, part of your rate process. It'll be accelerated given the fact that we need to have a rate if you want to move forward with a rate ready to go by the end of November. But there will be a process where people were allowed to provide some input for you.
That's the way it goes. So why are we paying $45,000 to have somebody tell us what we need? Is that what that's about? So right, but I'm just asking why that's why we need to pay $45,000, because if we know that it's $4.2 million over 10 years plus the almost $1 million in 2019, given the $750,000 plus the why do we need to pay somebody $45,000 to tell us how much to raise our rates to cover it? It seems to me that we have, you know, I just don't understand why I have to pay. Why?
How am I going to go tell the voters or the residents that we're spending $45,000 because we can't divide? I mean, what more is there to this?
I'll start off by saying that the rate, what we presented tonight, is only on capital. The rate that FCS Group comes up with will also include operational costs and other requirements that the city has, such as NPDES compliance. So on the surface, it seems like a straightforward computation. They will also be looking at our policy and modeling levels of service versus fees, and making recommendations based on that. And when I say levels of service, I'm referring to delivery of projects. That's part of it. How frequently do we clean out our ponds, our ditches, that kind of activity.
So it's not just a rate study. It's an entire program performance study.
Correct. The rate study, at the end, one of the outcomes will be a recommended rate. But they will review, and actually they have already requested, once they get on board, they've identified the data that they need from us in order to be able to provide that rate.
Okay, and then this is going to give you a plan, not just a rate, but a plan. We're going to have a whole package for our stormwater coming out of this $45,000 study.
To my understanding, and I can't say that I've only interviewed FCS Group once, and since then we've corresponded via email, so I'm not fully up to speed on this particular expertise, but one of the things that they're going to be doing is looking at our current code and policy and giving us their insights as to what we can do differently from a policy perspective. They're going to be looking at our financials as well, and that's some of the data that they have requested. They're going to be looking also at what have we delivered with our $78 per year. And use that as a foundation as to what we can do in the future. So those are some of the elements. Bob, I don't know if you want to add anything else to that.
Well, I would simply add, although maybe on the surface it would appear you could do a back-of-the-envelope computation and come up with a rate based on the expenses, but you want to make sure if we're going to be charging residents more, asking residents to pay more, maybe substantially more than they're paying today, that we've adequately looked at all the various user groups that are going to be paying to the system, that we've evaluated all of our, you know, the different policy questions so that we can accurately defend the rate that we're asking them to pay in order to be responsive to the needs of the city. And I don't think that's kind of, again, I performed a back-of-the-envelope computation pretty quickly and just to get an order of magnitude of what the rate might be. But I wouldn't want to present that to someone as the methodology for increase in a rate. I think the proposal that Gina has mentioned, I think, it would be a thoughtful one and one that would serve the city well.
But people were, it was a pot of money and people were pulling out of it for all sorts of things to take pressure off the general fund. But we really do need an entire stormwater plan. So
that's correct. They will be looking at, again, what have we spent our surface water fees on and what have we accomplished.
Thanks, Mayor. One of the things, and this is probably for the city staff, that I would like to see personally, and I think would be very helpful going forward, especially we're in this stage of the projects, is that if we're identifying projects that are either cost shareable or cost recoverable, that we identify those, and then at some point we see what we are actually going to recover, what we would recover versus what we estimated we should recover versus what we actually did. I think that would help determine if it's even worth doing. I'd like to know if how much money actually comes in or comes back from users, people who tear up the street and whatnot, how difficult that process is to get the money out and stuff. Sounds difficult on a case-by-case basis to me.
Gina, are you going to be able to...
I wish we were having this conversation a few months ago. Unfortunately, we're having it tonight in September, and so we have to deal with our current reality. So, yes, ideally we would want to advertise, you know, at the end of the year when contractors, like Daryl mentioned, are planning out. We've learned it in Exploration Park recently, and that's just industry practice. It will take a few months for a consultant to look at these locations and put together a PS&E packet. Plan, specs, and estimate, yeah, to advertise the Fs. And then we also have to have the funding to be able to deliver the construction.
And you're looking to do this stuff next year, the Fs?
The Petit's recommendation is that we deliver the Fs next year. Construct in the summer of next year. Now, we have certain realities, like we have to design and we have to fund.
Yeah, just one more thought, if it's okay. Also, one more thought, and yeah, I mean, there's always that in a more normal world, or maybe not as robust of a Puget Sound world, you want to advertise, you know, like you say, right at the beginning, end of the year, towards the beginning of the year. However, right now, at the American Public Works Association conference, that was held in spring, WashDOT, so Washington State Department of Transportation, and one of the leader large contractors, Peter Kiewit, they're expecting a 10% jump in the construction industry for 2019, and they're expecting another 10% jump in 2020, and that's because, you know, you're seeing all the Sound Transit activity, you're seeing the Seattle Move activity, you know, the King County, I'm probably getting my names wrong, but there's just a lot going on, let alone the private dollars that are being invested, you know, the Googles, the Amazons of the world.
Okay. Does anybody else have questions?
So what do you need from us on this?
Tonight was simply to share the information with you. We're going to be coming back in short order, even in advance of the rate analysis and rate discussion, is to seek funding for the design of the F PSE packages. And so recognizing that that in itself will exceed the budget that you have in the stormwater. So it's coming to you maybe prematurely, but it's also something we feel that we need to get moving on in order so we can hit a good competitive market for our bidding climate in advance of the ultimate rate discussion. But that'll come to you at a future meeting in the very near future.
Do you know, will this study also, the $45,000 study, will that also include, like, we borrowed money from ourselves to fix Sweetwater Ranch, how we pay that back to, could we still owe that? Even though it's
for us. It won't be part of that study, but that's something that we're doing, our own interfund loan from the general fund to the surface water fund, and it'll have its repeat payback schedule, and we may need to do the same source of funding in order to start on the PSE F-fault work.
Okay, but I just want to ask people as well, if they know that we have to pay back $700,000.
Well, that's correct. It needs to be factored in as part of the
now to the point where Mill Creek, when we were a young city, we didn't have as much maintenance to do. But we're to the point where our roads, we recognized a couple of years ago, it wasn't $100,000 a year, it's $1 million a year kind of number, order of magnitude. We're at the same realization now on our stormwater. And so I'm in favor of if staff comes to us during the budget cycle and says it's real time to hire another engineer for our group, as much as we love Dale and Petit, you guys are great, but I think we're at a point where we've got enough work to keep some people busy in terms of our own construction management opportunities or some of our own design, or at least just keeping track of this. This is a lot for Gina and her group to try to juggle. There's a lot on their plates. And I think we would do a better job if we had more staff that was 100% us, and so we can make judicious use of the consultants instead of having to depend on them for all the work. So. And Dale, if you want to apply, that'd be great. So.
Hey, I'm a former public employee. I have 10 years of PERS, so I'm all for that answer.
Hey, I also like the idea that was mentioned about using interns to sit and stare at, you know, with some training.
They need some training, but it can.
Well,
be
no, it, and stuff that you when can you do. Looked at Wildflower, I mean, it was Councilmember Todd who, when the things were poking through, that one of your ideas was, well, couldn't we go in there and just cut that stuff off? I don't know if it works, but we can look at things agreement between Snohomish County and the City of Mill Creek for 30th Avenue Southeast Reconstruction Project Funding.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, the Public Works Director will present this, but just a little bit of information in advance of that. After a night of talking about spending money, this is a action for you to receive money. $50,000 agreement with Snohomish County in order to support 35th Avenue reconstruction project. And I asked the Public Works Director if she had any more information to present to Council. The recommendation, of course, is to authorize me to execute this agreement.
Thanks, Bob. This was a grant application referred to as SCPP, Small Capital Projects Partnership, that the city submitted requesting an amount of $50,000 to Snohomish County. We have learned that we are recommended to receive these funds. So I wanted to also take the opportunity to provide a brief update on 35th, not only related to this ILA, but also to where the project's at. And what do those $50,000 mean to the city? So table one in your packet, on page 71 of your packet, summarizes where we are with our two contracts, construction contracts, as of today. So Gray and Osborne, who's doing our construction management and inspection, their current contract amount is $11,300. One of the things that this amount does not include is the work related to change order 2. That's something that I'm working with them at this time. Change order 2 being the removal of the 254-inch culverts that was approved in July. The other contract, obviously, that we have is with Harbor Pacific, and the dollar amount shown on Table 1, $5,733,068, that includes the two change orders that have been executed to date. So what this translates to, and you'll see the numbers balance out, is based on these current contract amounts, our city contribution went from a few thousand dollars at the time of award to over $1 million. The good news is that it's still within the $2 million of the time when the current CIP was adopted. So we're still trending well, even with the two change orders. In addition to that, we've had active construction for almost 2 months. The road was closed in early July, so I wanted to take the opportunity again to debrief you on some of the highlights. It is a busy and active construction site, and it'll suffice to say that the hole in the middle of the road is getting bigger and bigger, and by the end of the week, it will be big, and we will need a temporary bridge in order to go from one side to the other. And that's, when I say we, I'm referring to the construction crew. Few of the highlights, traffic control in partnership with police department and also with communications and marketing. I feel fairly comfortable with where we are. We have been collecting data. Luckily, one of my predecessors collected pre-construction data in March of 2017, so we're able to compare numbers of traffic volumes in the two neighborhoods to the west of 35th before construction and during construction. And thanks to Chris White and the police department, the chief, we are able to even compare ADT's traffic, daily traffic, to before school started and after school started during this construction season. So we have data available. We have installed multiple temporary speed bumps that have helped with the traffic in the neighborhood. So I feel comfortable where we are today. We're probably doing as much as we can without impacting the greater community as a whole. So that's just traffic control. That's process during construction. That is not what we're aiming for. What we want is a road that functions, certainly when it's wet. So a couple of accomplishments of where we are and updates. Change order 2, again, that's the removal of the 254-inch culverts. We are 60% complete with the removal of those two culverts. So that's why the hole is getting bigger. The 40% that's left, and it's on the west side of the road, is because there's Frontier fiber optic on that side of the road. And tonight, starting at midnight, from midnight to 6 a.m., Frontier will be out there removing their fiber so that our contractor can complete the other 40%. And that's where there will be a full hole on the road from east to west, and we'll need a temporary structure. So let's keep our fingers crossed, because if Frontier is able to pull that off tonight, that will save the city approximately $30,000 that was included in change order 2. So I also want to acknowledge that the construction management team, Grant Osborne, has been fabulous, a fabulous resource to me in being able to get to where we are today. Those are the main highlights. One more that's probably fundamental on this project is the pin piles, the pin pile installation. So we have 504 total pin piles that need to be installed for this project. To date, we're at 94. We have a few more installed, but those 94 are the ones that have reached bearing capacity. So they are at the desirable installation depth. The deepest that we've gone, and I have a table, but it's about 50 feet. That is the lowest level at which we've reached bearing capacity. It's varied. Average is 30 feet. We haven't gotten to the location where we have the question mark in our soil samples, and at that point we're estimating needing to go as deep as 65. But we'll see. We'll know more as we progress. So that's an update. Overall, the schedule is a little bit behind but we may be able to catch up depending on how quickly we can pour concrete in the structure location. So that's my brief update. Be happy to answer any questions if there's any.
I'd like to say I have not had any more complaints about traffic. And I love the new signage and the way thing. I hate those bumps, but they sure are effective. And we're going to own those forever. We bought those.
No, those are part of this contract. The contractor will take those away. We do have a speed radar that we will own after the project's complete.
So you said we're a little bit behind. Could you remind me of the completion, where we expect it to be completed?
Yeah. So our target is to be what's called substantially complete. So that's where the road is functional and open to the public by December. And then have physical completion, which in this project translates to the final lift of asphalt by January. It all depends on temperatures when they're warmer, but we need warmer temperatures whenever that happens. So that's what we're aiming for.
And so you say we're a little behind. If we don't catch up with the concrete pouring or whatever, how much is a little behind?
About 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So it should be open, like, by Christmas?
That would be a great Christmas gift.
I think the merchants would agree. Okay. So what you're looking for is a motion to authorize the city manager to execute an agreement with Snohomish County to receive up to $50,000 for the purpose of helping the city of Mill Creek fund construction for the 35th Avenue Southeast Reconstruction Project. Do we have a motion?
Second.
Second. Any further discussion?
For us to do, I'm going to take federal responsibilities. Is there Snohomish County's requirements that is extraordinary over what we do normally in terms of insurance requirements or all the other specs they've got in there?
Not in my review of the grant, and also, not only that, it is very open, I would say. So it doesn't specify on which elements of the construction we need to spend the $50,000. It's just construction improvements.
Good. Thank you.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Thank you. And thank you very much for the update. Okay, so now we're down to the consent agenda. We have approval of checks number 58930 through 59144 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $1,623,249.98. Audit Committee Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw and Councilmember Cavallari. Any exceptions?
Exceptions.
Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $716,230.37. Any exceptions?
Exceptions.
No exceptions.
And City Council meeting minutes of July 24th, 2018. So do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Move.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. We're down to reports. I don't have anything right now. Councilmember Bond?
No report.
No report.
I know there was a lot of hype, but no report, Mayor.
No report.
No report.
CIP. Indeed, it's pretty true that Harry Park's roof is 25 years old, maybe needs replacing. Kirby Park is 10 years old, and the fact that somebody's been hanging in the gutters and doing checks on them, I agree we'll have to fix those, but hopefully we take the Park Board's recommendation and do some sanity check on these things, because I have a lot of shake roofs have, they turn into, that's cool. That's what makes them look nice. I'm not in favor of just wholesale replacing them. So let's please go through there and be careful about how we spend our dollars. Thanks.
And can I just answer that? Because the board did meet this past week or last week, and it was the engineers recommendation that we go to the more long-term metal roofs on these projects, that you're not going to have to look at them again for at least the next 20 to 30 years. I think that was the whole rationale behind Nathan's recommendation.
So we're 15 years at Gerber Park, I'm in favor of metal roofs.
Just a note in the planning calendar, Mayor, there's a few more items I'll put on the agenda for your remaining 9 meetings of the year, but all your meeting dates are filling up with policy issues.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay, so audience communication. Pepper and then Will.
Barbara Heidel, 1401 144th Place, Southeast. I'd just like to comment, since none of you did make a comment, about the parade that was last Saturday, the Mexican Independence Day parade. I wish that it could have been better attended, but I understand that the notice was very short. I was speaking to, because I volunteer at Silver Lake Elementary School, and I told one of the teachers that I work with that there was a parade, and she said, I didn't know. She said, I try to attend these kinds of parades to help support my students that I have. So I'm hoping that they will do it again next year, because it was really awesome. But I hope, being that they've started, that they will come forth sooner so the word can get out better, so more people can attend. The attendance wasn't too terrific, but it still was extremely enjoyable. Thank you.
Right, it was a lot of fun. I was there, so. Well?
Well, Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast. I'd ask that all the engineers and technical people not use abbreviations. I haven't got a clue what NPDS means. I'm sure somebody could tell me quickly, but it would be appreciated if in the future they do that. I see by the discussion tonight that by my back of the envelope calculation, stormwater may cost me another $200 a year. And I noticed the schools are already bitching about their lack of funds for teacher salary next year. They've been bitching in the past about not having a new high school. And Mike adds maybe we need another engineer, which is probably true. I'd like to know from all you guys where in the hell I'm going to get the money for all that. I don't work anymore. It's just pure investment. So, in light of that, I was grateful that Kaiser reduced their health insurance for Part B and D premiums last year. They didn't give any money to politicians for their elections this year. If I need more money, I guess the Herald subscription goes by the wayside. So I only got so much money a year, guys. And it comes out of somebody's pocket other than mine. So I just keep cutting back. I've been doing that for what? I retired at 55, which was fortunate, fully retired at 59. So we're still whittling away at this stuff, but we still have to add roads into that. So if you guys got some idea where I can get some more money, that would be appreciated. And I'm sure your staff's going to want a salary increase next year. And then, finally, there's an interesting article, letter to the editor in the Beacon about one gentleman wrote in and says, maybe the problem with city managers in Mill Creek is Mill Creek. Worthy of thought. Very serious. I've seen this once before at Hanford. We had a real serious problem with attitude among the operating engineers at Hanford. One night, a hose bib broke in sub-zero weather. That was cleaning water for the radioactive filters that we used at Hanford, and those are primary containment for containing radioactive material from emissions to the outside. That hose bib broke. Water ran all night. Engineers avoided it, ignored it. Engineer came in the morning. I says, what's going on? This light's on. Why didn't you pay attention to that? We didn't think it was serious. The reason I'm giving you this story is because I think it's appropriate. Later, I was talking to a consultant who was monitoring the Wolf's power station over there. The operators weren't paying attention to the alarms. Alarm went off and nobody did anything. He said, what are you going to do about that? That's an alarm. You're supposed to do something. You're operators. Turns out it's just a compressor alarm, no big deal, but you're supposed to respond. Then it occurred to me, and I'm not a religious person, sins of our fathers. And then you started putting it all together, and the whole community was that way. We had a terrible time with operators. It cost one operator his life as he opened a steam valve, and resulting in a subsonic explosion, so to speak, singed the interior of his lungs, and he died 5 days later. Anyway, I only mention that because I thought that guy who wrote that letter was maybe good food for thought. There's a problem with city engineers, the city.
Anybody else? Okay, I've been told that we need a very brief executive session, Scott.
Yes, an executive session for potential litigation under RCW 4230.110.
Action is expected?
No action is expected.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll be in executive session. 20 minutes. Okay.
I put it on the clock. So.
How's it going?
Yeah. Brought your pillow.